Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to talk about Minnesota's newest state veteran cemetery, get ready for another honor flight, and hear from our state command sergeant major. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
Each year from September 15th to October 15th, Americans observe National Hispanic Heritage Month to celebrate the contributions of Americans whose ancestors came from Spain, Mexico, the Caribbean, and Central and South America. September is a significant month because it's the anniversary of independence for many Latin American countries. While there is much to celebrate culturally, Hispanic Americans have made countless sacrifices in defense of our nation. During the Spanish-American War, several thousand Hispanic volunteers, mostly from the southwestern United States, fought with distinction in the United States Army. Hispanics continued to fight with distinction throughout both World Wars, Korea, Vietnam, and beyond. Their selfless service and dedication to the United States military remain strong today. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, please join me in celebrating and recognizing the exceptional contributions of these Americans, both past and present.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. David Swantek is the Senior Administrator of the Memorials Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He's responsible for overseeing the administration and field operations of three state veteran cemeteries here in Minnesota. These cemeteries provide access to burial in a state veteran cemetery within 75 miles of their home to an estimated 90,000 veterans. And David, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. It's good to be back.
You've been busy out there. We've visited a number of times over the years, but can you share with our listeners, you first got into this kind of business out in the state of Wyoming?
I did. In my home state, the great state of Wyoming, I started working at the State Veterans Cemetery near Casper, Wyoming in the early 90s, and at first it was just a summer job cutting grass while I was going to college out there, and almost three decades later, it's turned into something quite more significant than that, being here in Minnesota and responsible for the three cemeteries that we now have here.
And in July of 1996 was kind of an important month. That's when you joined the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
It is. It's hard to believe that 20-plus years has gone by since I first came to Minnesota. Of course, Minnesota is now home after that amount of time, and I really enjoy living here and working for the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's just been a great privilege and honor to work with veterans and leadership in our agency to accomplish what we have in providing this important service and benefit to our veterans.
Yeah, I'll bet you sneak back to Wyoming and do a little hunting once in a while.
I try to get back. I don't do much hunting anymore. The cost of, unfortunately, I'm a non-resident of Wyoming in terms of hunting, so the cost of a license out there is a bit prohibitive at this point. But I do get out there. I still have family in Wyoming, and I really enjoy when I do have an opportunity to go back home.
Well, David, one of the things you came here for was in Minnesota, there's some federal, if you will, national cemeteries for veterans. But you came here, and the first project was to build one in Little Falls, and it sits right outside of Camp Ripley.
It does. It's really a perfect location, and it wasn't intentional that the cemetery would be there. It just happened to be that a group of local veterans in Morrison County decided to start pushing for the construction of a state veteran cemetery, and they happened to secure this piece of property where the cemetery sits today, which is adjacent to Camp Ripley, as you mentioned. But the property was never owned by the state. It was actually owned by Minnesota Power, and Minnesota Power donated the property to this local group of veterans, and they in turn donated it to the state. And 20 plus years later, there sits a cemetery that's buried several thousand veterans to date.
Along with some names that people know, like General Vesey.
Yes, General Vesey is the first chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to not be buried in Arlington National Cemetery. And the fact that he chose our cemetery in Little Falls to be the site of his final resting place was certainly a great honor for us and in the state of Minnesota to have that war hero buried in the state next to Camp Ripley, where his military career started.
Of course, he started off in the Minnesota Army National Guard as an E-1, worked his way all the way up to four-star general and chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and what a treasure he was. We've had him on the show a few times, and he was just a delight to talk to. Dave, we were up there last week for an event at Camp Ripley, and I stopped into the Little Falls State Cemetery, and it's impeccably cared for still yet today. I think you have something to do with that, but I stopped in because I wanted to see the final panel of the artwork in the rotunda up there for the Air Force, and boy, those are beautiful.
They really are. That project, it took quite some time to complete, was in the works for over a decade. But now that final piece, the painting depicting the history of the United States Air Force being there and hung, is really completes the room there where all of our families have their final goodbyes to their loved ones. And it's turned out to be just a tremendous, it's a monument, really, to veterans.
Those panels are Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, they're all up there. So if you're in the neighborhood, stop into the State Veterans Cemetery, go to the rotunda in the middle there, and just stop in and go look at them. They're beautiful, well done. We're speaking with Dave Swantek, the Senior Administrator of Memorials Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. David, I think when I first met you, you were still taking care of Little Falls, and then up came a project down by Rochester. It's the number two down in Preston. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, that's correct. In 2015, November of 2015, on Veterans Day, we conducted our first burials at what is now our second State Veterans Cemetery located in Preston. And just an expansion of that benefit that we had offered or had available to veterans in Little Falls since the early 90s. And the expansion of that opportunity for veterans to choose a burial that's closer to home is really what drove the idea of having additional state veteran cemeteries in geographically located areas that would expand that benefit to veterans closer to their homes.
And Dave, I understand there were a couple of veterans that were local politicians that were just waiting to get in there.
It turns out that was the case. It was two former mayors of Preston that were the first burials there in that cemetery. And it was kind of special to be able to identify that these families had held on to the cremated remains of these gentlemen because they knew that this cemetery was under construction, in the works, and they had directed their families that is where they wanted to be buried. And so those families held on to that remains so that they could have that honor being the first buried.
Now, Dave, I haven't had a chance to get down to Preston, but I have been to Little Falls, and that one is just beautiful. I'm told that Preston resembles Arlington, and it's just another beautiful piece of property.
It's magnificent. When you drive into the cemetery, you kind of come up this long hill, this narrow drive, and when the cemetery opens up, the grounds, the trees, just kind of opens up into this vista that you see out across the property there, and it really is fantastic. And the compliments that we get on just the natural beauty is they come in one after another.
So, Dave, the thing that you're trying to do with these state veterans cemeteries is to have your veterans that can be buried close to home so the families don't have to travel all the way to the Twin Cities. And so for all the veterans and the families of veterans down in southwest Minnesota, they must be pretty happy that they've got that option down in Preston.
They are. What we find is that if a cemetery, or if like a national cemetery like Fort Snelling or another state cemetery is located further than around 75 miles from a veteran's home, they'll tend to choose a local option because the veteran cemetery is just too far away.
And in your state cemeteries, the veteran gets buried free.
That's correct.
And they have the option to have their spouse buried, but there's a small fee for that.
We do charge a fee for the burial of a spouse, which distinguishes us a bit from a national cemetery. National cemeteries like Fort Snelling do not charge that fee, but it's a nominal fee, and we've never had families express an issue with us charging that fee. We utilize the funds that we collect with that fee to help us operate and maintain the cemeteries.
Very good, sir. Dave, we're going to talk about the State Veterans Cemetery number 3 that recently opened up in Duluth when we come back. Please stay with us. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Dave Swantek, who is the Senior Administrator of Memorial Affairs at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And that means he's responsible for overseeing the administration and field operations of 3 state veteran cemeteries in Minnesota. These cemeteries provide access to burial in a state veteran cemetery within 75 miles of their home to an estimated 90,000 veterans. And Dave, we talked about the fact that you kind of accidentally got into this business in Wyoming. Came to Minnesota and they put you to work building a Little Falls Cemetery, and you thought everything was good. Next thing, you had to go down to Preston and build another cemetery, and no rest for the wicked, and you must be a bad man because they sent you up to Duluth.
They did. There's worse places that you could work. Preston and Duluth are both just beautiful spots in our state, but I have been busy in Duluth lately. We just opened our 3rd cemetery up there, and we actually opened for burial in November of last year, but we just recently dedicated the cemetery officially, and so we're off to a good start there, and the cemetery's been well-received in Duluth.
Now, on the Duluth, the Minnesota Veterans Cemetery, can you tell me, let's go back to the beginning of that one. How did that come about? Where'd the land come from? How did you acquire it? Tell us the story.
Sure. Well, when we started talking about additional cemeteries beyond Little Falls, Duluth actually was the first place that we had anticipated constructing a cemetery, but it proved that finding a suitable site for the cemetery there was difficult. So after looking at around 30 different properties over the course of several years, we found this property where the cemetery's at today. It's actually was owned by the state, was in the school trust for the state. So it was a piece of property that the DNR administered, and it turned out that we were able to secure that land. They administratively transferred ownership to the Department of Veterans Affairs, and we were able to move forward within designing and ultimately constructing a cemetery on that site.
Are there some special requirements? I imagine you have to have good drainage. You can't build it too close to the lake or anything like that.
Well, that's true, and that's one of the things that made finding a property in Duluth a bit difficult. It seemed like everything we were looking at was either very low land, swamp-type land, or it was extremely expensive. It just wasn't going to work out for the cemetery. So finding this site finally is what propelled the project to move ahead.
From the photos that I've seen from the dedication ceremony, it looks like it's out by the highway, but it's surrounded by a lot of trees, and looks like you laid it out pretty well again.
Well, we hope so. It certainly feels like it's always been there. Now that you drive in there, it is, as you mentioned, located right off of Highway 53. It's about 10 miles out of Duluth past the airport up there, and we did... in a lot of ways, carved the cemetery right into the natural wooded landscape that existed up there, and it's just a beautiful site in its own way. Preston is very beautiful. Duluth is just as beautiful in its own way.
So to get to this site from Duluth, you're going up the hill past the 148th Fighter Wing and down 53, and it's, you said, about 10 miles, and it's on the right.
10 miles on the left.
It's on the left, okay.
So it's hard to miss. There's a very grand stone entryway that we constructed out there, so it's not difficult to see from the road. The signage is well laid out there by our partners at MnDOT, and it's in a great location.
So how long did it take you to design this, lay it out, and build it? You had to put in some roads. You had to put in all kinds of things.
Yeah, we've been fortunate to work with the same designer on these projects from Preston to Duluth, and even some work in Little Falls, local design firm here in the Twin Cities, Stantec. And it took about a year to do the design work, and then ultimately it was a couple years of construction, and actually we're still wrapping up the final phases of construction up there. Yet the weather's caused us a bit of delay with how wet it's been up there the last 3 years now. It continues to rain, it seems like, multiple times a week.
Tough year this year.
Oh, boy, it's been tough, but we're making progress, and Well, I'd say we're 98% complete up there in Duluth. So it's been a long time coming, but we're finally to the end of the road on this project.
So over the last couple of years, you've spent some quality time up in Duluth.
I have. Yeah, my wife, I think there for a while, was wondering if I still lived at home. So I've been gone a lot, but it's, again, it's a rewarding job, and it's something that I love doing. I love the public to be able to come out and see what these facilities ultimately become and how they honor our veterans. So it's very rewarding work.
We're speaking with Dave Swantek, who is the Senior Administrator of Memorials Affairs at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Dave, since you've been here in Minnesota since 1996, you had any idea how many veterans have been buried in our state cemeteries?
Boy, it's a lot. We're over 8,000 veterans and their eligible family members have been buried in our cemeteries since that time. And, of course, the majority of those, over 7,700 of those, are in Little Falls. But in Preston, we're approaching 500 burials there since November of 2015, and we're rapidly approaching 200 being buried in Duluth since November of last year. So that cemetery is really being used by the local veterans.
Our veterans better slow down and yes, not move in there quite
right.
So quick.
Yes, exactly.
So how much room do we have among those three and for veterans in the future?
There's several thousand. We do phased development, so we try to develop the needed grave sites for a 10-year period of time, and then as we exhaust those grave sites, we develop more so that we don't run out of grave sites. We've master planned the whole cemetery out, and each cemetery has over 50 years worth of burial space in them. So
you've got plenty of room to grow.
Plenty of room to grow. There's no nothing on the horizon that shows our cemeteries, our state veteran cemeteries, will be out of space anytime soon.
So we've got one in Little Falls, one in Duluth, one down by Rochester. What's next? There seems like there's portions of Minnesota we haven't covered.
Yeah, well, next for us is down in southwestern Minnesota. We've identified Redwood Falls as the location of our next project, and we were actively seeking federal funding for that project. We'll know by the 15th of October, so here in a couple of weeks, whether or not we receive funding for that. If we do not, we'll pursue funding again for the next federal fiscal year, and we'll continue to pursue funding until we get it and construct that cemetery in Redwood Falls.
So you may have a year closer to home and some time to go back to the other three cemeteries, make sure everything's being run right.
Yeah, get around and make sure that everything's up to the standards that we all expect.
And warn your wife that she might see you a little more often. I hope that's good.
That's true. That is very true.
So what challenges do you see in the next 10, 20 years?
You know, I think the big hurdles we've had, we've overcome in identifying where we want these new cemeteries, getting them funded and constructed. So, you know, we certainly have the challenge of getting the project going in Redwood Falls. We don't see a challenge in the funding. It's just the opportunity that comes up. We compete with other states for that funding. They rank projects according to certain priority factors, and so it's just kind of a wait and see game for that. So I think a lot of our significant challenges hopefully are behind us.
So Dave, I saw Commissioner Herkey last week, and he was talking about the Duluth Veterans Cemetery and the others, and he was talking about getting on the waiting list to get in there, and I thought he was talking to me. I said, Commissioner, I'm not ready yet. He's Tom, we got a spot for you. I said, that's good, sir. I'll wait a little bit. What should our veterans do if they live near one of these cemeteries? Is there something they can do beforehand to make sure that when the time comes, everything's set?
Yeah, there sure is. We have what we call a pre-registration application, and it's just a simple process that assists veterans in pre-need planning. It's a matter of filling out a one-page form that basically provides contact information for the veteran, and then they submit a copy of their DD-214 along with that application. And what that does is we're establishing ahead of time that they are in fact eligible to be buried at one of our state veteran cemeteries, so that their families aren't scrambling to locate the proper paperwork at the time of death. So we find that veterans are really taking advantage of that pre-application process. We have several thousand pre-applications on file at our locations throughout the state. So it's a great way to pre-plan.
So I'm guessing you can go to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs website, or probably go visit your county veteran service officer and they can help you with that.
Either one of those things will get where you need to be.
Well, Dave, you've done a great work, and I'm glad to have you back on the show, and I'm sure the next time you get to work in Redwood Falls, we'll have you back in and see how that's going. But good work, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Good to see you again, too.
This is Dave Swantek, the Senior Administrator of the Memorials Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Stay tuned. When you come back, we're going to talk about the next honor flight with Jerry Kaiser. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to talk to Jerry Kaiser about another upcoming honor flight. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
While the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs provides many meaningful programs and services to our veterans, one of the most significant is providing a dignified and respectful final resting place. Indeed, for many veterans, this is the most important benefit that they will request to commemorate their service to our country. On September 21st, we dedicated our Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery in Duluth. The first veteran was laid to rest in this cemetery on Veterans Day, November 11th, 2018. The cemetery has interned 175 veterans and family members since that time. The dedication ceremony included the 34th Infantry Band, the Duluth Choir. We had presentations from Congressman Pete Stauber, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Undersecretary Randy Reeves. We had a great crowd, and it was gratifying to see the support of so many in the community who have advocated for this new cemetery. For more information on our cemeteries, visit minnesotaveteran.org/CEM or Charlie Echo Mike.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to minnesotamilitaryradio.com. In May of 2004, our nation completed the construction of the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. to commemorate the sacrifices of the greatest generation. Sadly, because of their age, financial constraints, and health concerns, many of these veterans may not have had an opportunity to see their monument. Honor Flight Twin Cities is happy to offer free flights to World War II and Korean veterans to Washington, D.C. to see their monuments. And a frequent guest on the show is back today, Jerry Kaiser. Jerry, from Honor Flight Twin Cities, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Jerry, I know that as a national organization, there have been honor flights from all over the country, but today we want to talk about Honor Flight Twin Cities. How long have you been doing this, and what flight number is coming up in November?
Well, Tom, we started in 2008. I was talked to by one of the national directors, and he asked if I would consider doing that, and I said yes. I was at that time the president of the Vietnam Veterans of America in the state of Minnesota, and so I said, yeah, that would be something to do. So this year, after 11 years, we'll have done our 22nd honor flight.
So on Saturday, November 2nd, Honor Flight Twin Cities is sponsoring its 22nd honor flight for Minnesota and Western Wisconsin World War II and Korean veterans. And how many veterans and how many guardians will be on that plane?
Well, it'll be a total of 80 veterans, of which I think we have now, it's variable sometimes, 15 World War II veterans. And the rest are all Korea veterans, plus the guardians. So the total flight will have about 180 people.
Now, you've mentioned guardians, and guardians are the crucial support system for the success of the program. It says on your webpage that each guardian is responsible for one veteran from the moment they arrive at Hubert Humphrey Terminal Number 2 to the time they return safely back home to the airport in the late evening. And each guardian is asked to donate $500 to participate in the flight. To fully prepare for the responsibility, and I've gone through this, they're required to complete a brief but comprehensive training session prior to the scheduled flight. Now, the veterans go free. The guardians do a lot of work and have a long day, but they contribute $500.
Yes, Tom, and you should know that you were on that flight and you did a great job. I just want to give you compliments on that.
Well, let me catch my breath here, Jerry. We did have the honor of going with you, and we took the radio show out there, and we did about 14 or 15 interviews, as I recall. It's a long day, but those veterans were just all fired up, and it was interesting. Let's go back to these Guardians. You put them through a training session.
Well, it's true. Now, this coming Sunday, we'll have the training for the next group of people who will be going. This is not a day to the mall with Grandpa. This is a mission statement to the World War II and Korea and Vietnam veterans, depending on which one they want to see, to see their memorials dedicated to all their sacrifices. Yes, so they need to know all the little secrets of taking care of their veteran and doing things right.
And you've got a lot of secrets for them, but some of them that aren't so secret is you've got some wheelchairs waiting. You've got some extra wheelchairs waiting. Some of the guys start out pretty well, but by the end of the day, they need a little help.
Yes, some of these gentlemen and ladies, they talk big. By 2 o'clock, they run out of gas just like everybody else. So, yes, we have the Department of VA in Minneapolis has given us over the years, every year, they give us wheelchairs to take with us at no charge. And I used to be able to take 60, but that's too much of a logistic situation for us. So I have 30 now already pre-planned at the airport in Reagan Airport, and then I take 20 on the aircraft to get them off the aircraft and get on the buses within a half an hour from the time we land.
We're speaking with Jerry Kaiser from Honor Flight Twin Cities on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Jerry, when we went through the training, the veterans got one color T-shirt, the volunteers got another color, but as I recall, you had some people designated medics as well.
Yes, we did. They wear a special hat, and now that medic is not in really... does not have to be a medical person that knows how to take care of an EMT, because they're watching us like a hawk there. If something happens, they kind of triage, and 911 people are there like a shot out of a cannon. They're watching for us, and we do have not had too many problems over the years.
Jerry, we're going to talk about the schedule for that long day in the next segment, but you had another surprise for us when we were out there that day. I think we had three great big tour buses full of veterans and the Guardians, but you also had a police escort. We didn't have to wait around getting anywhere we needed to go.
That is the best thing that ever happened to us. A number of years ago, I decided that we did not need to be shuffled around between others. Tour groups, that we were more important. I suppose that's selfish, but these men have never had that kind of reception there. So we go just like El Presidente. We go everywhere with the sirens blaring. And the last time I think we did, we ran 24 red lights in downtown and Arlington, Virginia.
Jerry, another thing that I noticed last time, as you know, I'm a Vietnam veteran, so are you.
Yes, sir.
So when I'm at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, I'm one of those guys up there touching some names and maybe dropping some tears and doing some things, and everybody else walks solemnly by. But when your World War II veterans get over to the World War II Memorial and the Korean veterans get up to theirs, they're pretty excited about it.
Oh, yes, and it's an emotional moment for them. We get them out there, and we have them salute, and as we play the national anthem and the taps, and the way it is there at that memorial, there's too many people there who have never been there, when we start to play taps, the whole place just goes really serenely quiet, and these gentlemen are just trying to hold that salute until that taps is done, and we honor one of them who comes along, brings their father's or relative's flag, and we dedicate that particular one to them, and it's something that we really like to do every time.
Now, for our listeners, more information is available at honorflighttwincities.org. And if you want to be a Guardian on one of these future flights, the key to that is find a World War II or a Korean veteran that wants to go and sign up with them.
Absolutely, Tom. That's the way to do it.
And Jerry, you're a nonprofit, and funds are needed to pay for the charter aircraft, tour bus service, hats, T-shirts, honor flight pins, meals, a biography book, video, photos, and veterans of the Guardians on the flight. And you've been blessed over the years to find a lot of sponsors, and a lot of folks send in some money. And I know you have special help from above that always helps you to pay for these costs.
That's right. And I will give a kudos to the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs. They say I can say this now because they did give us a stipend of $50,000 this last year for one of our flights. And we're very pleased that the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs did do that.
And you get a pretty good deal on the flight as well.
That's right. Well, Sun Country is in the business of making money too, but you know, people say, who does your fundraising? The good Lord Jesus does my fundraising. We just cash the checks.
But they do give you a good deal and good service.
Well, yes, they do treat us well. They are very pleased to have business with us. We started with them 10 years ago.
And are you getting special service from the TSA these days? Last time we went, you had a special line and we were all pre-checked in and away we went.
That's right. They go just like the El Presidente. They just show an ID and they get on there. And then when we come back back from Washington, all they got to do is show their name tag that nobody touches them.
Well, Jerry, for those of us that know you, we were impressed with the organization. Your wife does a great job of getting it organized, and then, of course, all you have to do is go lead the pack, right?
Well, yes. It's a coordinated effort with the general and the sergeant major. We do the best job we can.
Jerry, we got to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about Saturday, November 2, 2019, which is going to be your 22nd honor flight. We're speaking with Jerry Kaiser from Honor Flight Twin Cities. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Jerry Kaiser from Honor Flight Twin Cities about the history of the honor flights in the Twin Cities. He's scheduled for his 22nd honor flight on Saturday, November 2. And, of course, it's all well organized and it's filled up and it's ready to go. But, Jerry, just got a few minutes. Let's talk about this day. When we were on the trip with you, it's a long day. You got to get out there real early in the morning and get back late at night. I thought the guys might be sleeping on the flight on the way back, but they were all fired up. And, of course, there's a little party for them at the end. But start with the day. Let's run through the agenda.
Well, these gentlemen and ladies and the guardians, they're up at 4 o'clock. They're required to be at the airport at 5. And then we're airborne at 6. And to hustle them through TSA is not a problem as long as they line up in the line straight. They're always we pre-check them already. The TSA has got their name, address, and phone number. And we've never had a problem with the TSA people, with all of our veterans. We're not so sure about some of those guardians, though.
And there's snacks and coffee and stuff when they arrive at the airport, and then they get a little breakfast on the plane.
Yes.
And tell us about once they get out to Reagan, what happens then?
Well, once you get to Reagan, they got to get off the airplane and get back on the buses, get to the Iwo Jima Memorial to start with at about 10:15. And that time is that they get off get all the Marines off, everyone gets off, and they have a picture in front of the memorial. It's kind of like herding squirrels looking for nuts. They got to get, you know, they're not quite sure what they're supposed to be doing. So I herd them out there. We get some pictures. If we have a bugler that's with us there, we get to do the taps for all those Marines there and honor them for that. Then the next thing we do is we get on board and go to the Air Force Memorial. That's just above the Pentagon, which is a pretty nice view to see over the Potomac River over into Washington, D.C., and where we're going to be going. That's the spires of the world of the Air Force Memorial are really great, and we take pictures there and get that completed.
There's a park-like area there, and you know, we stopped for a little lunch last time.
Well, last time, now we've redone that, Tom. Now we use that extra time to spend there a few more minutes, and then we go down to have lunch at the Women's Memorial. We pay them a couple of dollars and more than that, $500, and then they have tables for us, and they get a nice time there. The bathrooms and everything are quickly, easy, accessible, and we have the lunch there and get to see all that's happening there. The next thing we do is we're going to be going through the city, depending on what's happening that time. We'll get through the city and past the Capitol on the front part of it and down Pennsylvania Avenue to the Navy Memorial, stop there for a few minutes, get them off. And there's where the police escort makes it. They make our day because they get us when we need to go. They're looking at our schedule, and they do a fabulous job getting them through the traffic. The first important one, well, they're all important, is the World War II Memorial. Everybody disembarks there, and we are able to gather together to honor those fallen and those still living and those who are still missing in action. 76,000 still missing from World War II. Honor them at that particular one. Get on the buses and the three of us go down to the same thing at the Korea Memorial. I do the taps for those people also. At the same time, we'll go to, they can go to the Lincoln Memorial and the Vietnam Memorial. They hustle in through that at 4:15. We must be on the buses so we can get up to the changing of the guard at the Arlington National Cemetery. That is really very serene up there, very important for them to see that. And we, because we're the honor flights, we do it at 5 o'clock, which entitles us then to see the lowering of the flag. The guards march in a specific way that clicks their heels to honor the World War II veterans. The next thing after that is done, we go to the Columbus Club over in Arlington for a fabulous dinner with a guard with us, color guard and the singing. Then they get on the airplanes again, hustle through the TSA there at Reagan, and we're on the airplane for another 2 hours, 2.5 hours coming back, and most of the time we've had our letters that have come to them already on the flight, and then we have this big surprise when we get off the airplane. There's about 500 people show up there with bands and officers and enlisted ROTC cadets, family members. It is a fabulous time. They have had the greatest emotional, spiritual, physical day in their life, and we have changed their life forever because they get these letters and honorariums from the family members and say, he never talked as much about this as anything else in his life, and we're so pleased that he has changed his attitude.
And Jerry, we heard the story of one wife that was waiting for her husband to come back off the honor flight, and they asked her about it, and she said, just like I was waiting for him to come home 75 years ago.
That is true. They are so sweet.
And Jerry, we're just about out of time. That honor flight's coming up on Saturday, November 2, and more information at honorflighttwincities.org. Please take a look at the website for pictures, and Jerry, thanks for coming in again today.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
This is Jerry Kaiser from Honor Flights Twin Cities. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. It is wonderful to be with you again. Thank you so much.
I know you're on the road today calling in on your cell phone, but I think we've got the sound pretty good. We want to talk a little bit about cyber today, and there's some interesting thing in the news about Secretary of State Steve Simon calling on the Minnesota National Guard resources to help protect the election next year.
Yeah, you know, what a great opportunity to showcase some of the expertise that we have inside of the Minnesota National Guard. And, you know, people may not be aware, but we have a full section that helps to manage our technical aspect of the military, of the Minnesota Guard. And, you know, what an opportunity to bring those experts and help to protect that election cycle for the state of Minnesota. So, yeah, you'll see the two entities working together to make sure that we got a nice, fair election that's not compromised via cyber attacks.
So the Minnesota National Guard has what's called a cyber protection team, as I understand it, and it's another prime example of we have the federal mission in the Minnesota National Guard and the state mission, and what a great way for the Minnesota National Guard to support the state.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the unique things about members of the Minnesota National Guard. You know, not only they serve as a military member, but they have civilian skills and assets that they bring to the organization as well. So, you know, we're talking about soldiers and airmen in the Minnesota National Guard who do exactly what we need them to do inside of our organization, but they do it out in the real world, and I'm using air quotes now, they do it in the civilian sector, and so they bring that real hands-on experience into the military, and that's just a great asset for us and for the citizens of Minnesota, of course.
Sergeant Major, about this time of the year, I know that we're working on substance abuse prevention, and I'm wondering if some of your soldiers or airmen are struggling with addiction, should they be afraid to come forth and ask for help?
Yeah, you know, absolutely not. And you know, we're not immune to it. We're all humans as well. And, you know, some people just get into some things that are not conducive to society or to what we say are our values inside of the military, and that's okay because we are a forgiving organization, but we can't help somebody if they don't tell us that they need help. And so we just want all of our members to know that we do have tons of resources available, And we want to ensure that our soldiers, our airmen, are educated, and that we do everything we can to help prevent substance abuse. But then those that are struggling with some type of an addiction, whether it's drugs or alcohol, that we have resources available helping to conquer that addiction.
So you actually want the troops, to, if they're struggling with that, to step up, ask for help, get some help, get it behind them, and move on with their career.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the key here is that they have to ask for help. See, Tom, it is, I don't want to say it's too late, but it's almost too late if you get caught when we do one of our random drug tests or something else. If someone can come forward well ahead of that and let us know they have an issue, it's much easier to work with them and to help them to get past that addiction.
So step up, ask for help, get the help, and get back to work. And Sergeant Major, speaking of careers, we have to let our listeners know that you're on terminal leave now. You're on the tail end of a good long career in the Minnesota National Guard, and this is the last time you'll be on the show in the capacity of the State Command Sergeant Major. Did you find civilian employment?
Yeah, I absolutely did. And, you know, the last 5 years has gone by very, very fast. So it's, you know, it's a bittersweet thing. We've had a great relationship, and I'm very fortunate that I've had the opportunity to become a team member of a company called Think Great. And, Tom, I get to do or keep doing what I'm doing right now, and that is coaching, teaching, and mentoring, and continuing on with that passion I have for development of others, specifically in the world of leadership.
And Sergeant Major, you're not going to get a break from Minnesota Military Radio, because we want to announce today to our listeners all over Minnesota that after the first of the year, you're going to be back as a guest host so that I can take my wife on a vacation now and then.
Yeah, and I am so excited about that opportunity. I want to be able to stay connected with our Minnesota National Guard, and this is a one of the great ways in which I get to do that. I've never been shy from getting behind a microphone, and I know that it's going to be a great opportunity. I'm really, really looking forward to having an opportunity to host the show, but I know it's going to be a big chair to fill because, Tom, you've been an outstanding supporter and an excellent host for Minnesota Military Radio, so I'm just excited to be able to step in and support you when you need to take some of that time off.
Well, thank you, Sergeant Major, and thanks for joining us again today.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a wonderful rest of the day, and thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us, Dave Swantek, Jerry Kaiser, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Herkey of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week as we'll meet the people who take care of our veterans as we record live from the flag atrium of the Minneapolis VA. That'll be next Thursday at noon. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.